listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist NEPR's Week in Review. Joining us today, Susan Bigelow, columnist with CT News Junkie, and Rick Hurst, publisher of An African American Point of View. Welcome to you both.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
This week, employees of the Daily Hampshire Gazette and Valley Advocate told management at the newspapers that they are looking to form a union. The effort was sparked in part by perceived gender pay inequities that came to light last year. Dusty Christensen is a staff writer at the Gazette.
We have been organizing for a year as a family of workers who have become closer and closer during our organizing efforts. I have never seen this paper so united.
The company's president, Aaron Julian, said that adding a union will erode the newspaper company and said management would no longer have the ability to directly connect with staff. Susan, there's still some hurdles for the workers to clear in order to formally unionize, but this follows some big papers recently that have looked to do this, such as the LA Times and Chicago Tribune. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, because journalism is very much under threat, a lot of journalists and their companies are very much at the mercy of their ownership, which in a lot of cases are sort of distant billionaires. You think of the Washington Post was owned by Jeff Bezos of Amazon. So unionizing may be one of the only ways to fight back against that and try to take back at least some control and protect the news organization. My news organization is journalist-owned. That's ctnewsjunkie.com. And that's just one model of trying to get away from the large corporations that are really not doing well by journalism, in my opinion.
Rick, looking at some of the papers around here, the Springfield Republican is unionized, but other dailies such as the Berkshire Eagle and the Greenfield Recorder, which, by the way, is also owned by the Gazette's parent company, they're not. Do you expect a unionizing effort to spread papers like this around our region?
I expect it to spread, and I'm not surprised at it at all. I mean, newspapers are under stress across the board, and there are going to be many cost-cutting moves, and oftentimes the moves are made against labor and other kinds of things that preserve costs that make the job more difficult for labor. So, I mean, I understand people wanting to fight for their dignity. That's all it's about. It's the same as any other labor movement. And I think it's going to expand and expand.
As Connecticut Governor-elect Ned Lamont continues to prepare to take over in January, it became clear this week just how much each vote he received cost him. It was about $18. That's nearly double what his Republican rival Bob Stefanowski spent. Both self-funded their campaigns, with Lamont spending nearly $12 million of his own money. Rick, what do you think about candidates dipping that deep into their own pockets?
Well, it's better than mine. But, you know, I don't see a problem with it as long as their own money. What I have a problem with is when they're getting it from outside sources, big money outside sources. Then the taint of corruption is there all the time. Otherwise, you know, it's your own money. If you want to invest it, fine.
Susan, shifting gears, for the last few Connecticut governor's elections, you've carefully charted voting patterns in terms of geography. Besides Lamont doing well in the large cities, where was he able to cut into Republicans' usual strongholds, and why?
Well, we actually saw him pick up a little bit more in kind of wealthier suburbs. And this is actually a trend that is a national trend, where Democrats are starting to make inroads into what was a Republican stronghold in wealthier suburbs. For example, the town of Simsbury used to be a very Republican town. It's a very wealthy place. Voted for Ned Lamont. And that was a big surprise. So that is one way he was able to get a little bit more than some of his predecessors.
Let's shift gears. Let's go to Maine. We don't usually talk a ton about what's going on up there, but an interesting story this week. The only Republican member of the U.S. House from New England went down to defeat in the first ranked choice election for a federal office. Both Democrat Jared Golden and Republican Bruce Poliquin finished with less than 50% of the vote at first. And yesterday, Maine's Secretary of State Matt Dunlap revealed the second round tally.
What we see in round two is that Democrat Jared Golden has 50.53% of the vote, and Congressman Poliquin has 49.47% of the vote.
Poliquin, who at first had more than 2,000 votes more than Golden, is challenging the constitutionality of ranked choice voting in federal court. Susan, does he have a leg to stand on here?
No, he doesn't. There's nothing in the Constitution that would forbid this kind of thing. I actually really like ranked choice voting. whenever there's more than two people in a race, you can sometimes win without a majority. And this, which allows you to pick a second choice, really does make it so that a majority of the people are actually electing somebody. And I think it's a great way to do things. I'm hoping it spreads.
Rick, there's been a lot of talk about ranked choice voting in recent years. Is this something more places should be looking at, or could there be some confusion among voters?
I don't see any confusion among voters if you educate them. I think it is something that's going to spread, and I think it's good. If they had ranked choice in Florida or Georgia, you wouldn't have to have all this recounting of the vote and all this controversy. So, yes, I think it's a good thing, and I think it's going to spread.
And finally this week, here's a question for you. Can elephants be counted as people? A lawyer is trying to change the legal status of some elephants who travel to the Big E every year. Stephen Wise argues the creatures are treated as non-human slaves. He wants the elephants taken from their owner and sent to a sanctuary in California. Rick, what do you think about this argument by the attorney Wise?
I think it's ridiculous, and I think the judge is right in calling his case in court frivolous. And I think you really open up a can of worms when you talk about calling animals humans.
And those worms are probably going to sue us.
Yes.
Susan, what are your thoughts about this intersection between animal rights and perhaps overstepping things a little bit too?
Well, animal rights is something that actually has grown. The definition of that has grown. But to give animals full legal rights, obviously there's no precedent for that. It really would be transformative if it ever actually came to pass. I doubt that it ever will. But, you know, we always can treat animals better.
All right. Susan Bigelow of CT News Junkie and Rick Hurst of An African American Point of View, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, our loyal listeners of The Shortlist and EPR's Week in Review. And one programming note, with Thanksgiving coming up next week, we'll be taking next week off from The Shortlist, but we'll return on the 30th of November. And remember, you can catch us at any time wherever you get your podcasts or at nepr.net/podcast hub. Also, be sure to listen to Beacon Hill and 5, our weekly check-in at the Massachusetts State House. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.